The question really is whether it should be considered criminal behavior on the part of people who have the public trust. You know, I mean, it is criminal behavior to set off a bomb in a federal building. Is it criminal behavior to start passing out poisons to people who have no real diagnosable diseases, to babies, for instance? They've been fooling us. They know, you know, the people that are AIDS researchers now are getting neurotic if you ask them any questions. There was a time when I first started asking questions, all I wanted was, where are the papers? Just tell me the papers that you read that convinced you that HIV was the cause of AIDS, because I need to reference those papers in some of the, I was working on a test for HIV with PCR, and I needed to write a little report to the NIH to say, here's the progress we've made. And the first line of it was, HIV is the probable cause of AIDS. And I thought that was true. This is before I got involved. And I said, what's the reference for that quote? And I looked for it for about 2 or 3 years and I never could find it. And by the end of 2 years, I'd ask everybody at every meeting that I'd gone to that talked about AIDS, I'd ask, you know, I'd look through every computer database. There is no reference. There is nobody who should get credit for that statement. Now that's a pretty weird situation in science, where getting credit for a discovery is the most important thing in your life as a scientist. You want your work to be associated with you, especially if it's got to do with something that's so important in the world that they're spending billions of dollars on it. We ought to know who was it that should get credit for pointing out to us that HIV was the probable cause of AIDS. And probable is not a very powerful word, but there is no such person. There is no paper, there's no group of papers. They can say, well, it's in there somewhere, but it's not in there somewhere.
Gallo couldn't find it for you?
Gallo wouldn't talk to me, but Montagnier couldn't find it for me. Montagnier said, why don't you, after, first they say, look at the CDC report, okay? They're talking about the bulletin of mortality and morbidity that comes out every couple of weeks. That's not a scientific publication in the sense of here's the data, here's the arguments, here's the conclusion. That's just a little thing that goes to doctors and say, when you see somebody come into your office with this kind of symptoms, you report it to us because it's possibly this or that kind of thing. It's not a scientific thing. It's not where the guy that wrote that bulletin that month doesn't get the Nobel Prize for having discovered that HIV is the probable cause of AIDS, right? I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous to quote that thing. And then I read that. I didn't think that was very, I mean, I'm talking about where did science come by the notion? You know, who brought that up? Who showed it to us? Who explained it to you? Where did you come up with the idea? He said, well, there's this SIV stuff. And I said, yeah, but that was last month. We've known this for a long time. Who is responsible for us knowing it? Don't we want to know that person's name? He walked away. After that was the last person I ever asked. I asked a whole lot of people in that 2 or 3 years when I was certain at first that there must be an answer. I was in a different field slightly. I figured the virologists had that one taken care of, but they didn't. There wasn't a soul. And there still isn't. And the more you ask them, now you ask them, you can get thrown out of a dinner party. I mean, you sit around with, go to some virologist's house and start talking about questions like that. Or even, you know, people that aren't virologists, people that are just ordinary people that are completely ignorant of the details will get mad at you if you start talking about the fact that AIDS may not be caused by HIV. Just say something simple like, it may not be caused because I can't find any evidence that it is. These people that are being treated with AZT, a fairly lethal drug if you take enough of it, they may be taking a drug that's killing. There are people dying just because of AZT. I mean, that's proven in big studies. Big studies like the Concord study. The conclusion of the Concord study was, this stuff is not good for you. You know, the little skeleton on the little crossbars, the crossbones, the skeleton and crossbones on the bottle says, probably wouldn't be a good idea to take this stuff unless you've got a good reason to. Now, I would say that probably, there have been, I don't know how many of the people who have died, so-called of AIDS, have actually died of AZT, because it certainly would wreck your immune system to take that stuff for a few years. It's like if you started taking any other chemotherapeutic agent for the rest of your life, it would be that agent probably that killed you. You know, when you give chemotherapy to somebody with cancer, you give them a round of it for maybe 14 days or a few days. Hopefully you're not going to kill the patient. You're going to kill the cancer. The patient's going to survive. But you don't keep giving it to him until he dies, because he certainly will. And AZT is just like those things. It's a little more lethal, than most of the anti-cancer things that people take for that. Everybody knows that those things, you wouldn't want to just keep taking them until you died. Why would they, I mean, how can somebody say, take this drug, it's not making you well, by the way, it's making you feel terrible, but you just, we don't have anything else to give you, and this is going to cost you $8,000 a year. And
because someone postulated that the AZT would stimulate T cells, and then it was shown that it did not stimulate T cells, that it was in a healthy way, that it was causing the body to have a hyperimmune reaction.
I didn't know somebody thought it was going to stimulate T cells. I thought they figured it was going to kill that virus because it's going to terminate DNA reproduction.
Yeah, that's what it does.
And it certainly does that, and it does that quite well in a lot of places that are not viral. I mean, it does that in normal immune cells, any rapidly growing tissue, just like any other chemotherapeutic type agent.
Hypothetical situation. Let's assume for a moment that HIV is the cause of AIDS, just for argument's sake.
Okay.
Right? How many HIV cells are there generally compared to healthy cells?
You mean how many cells are infected by the virus in somebody that's that fairly...
Yes.
The numbers vary wildly around, you know, all kinds of... There used to be a time when people said 1 out of 10 to the 4th, then they went to 1 out of 10 to the... There are some papers that say 1 out of 10 and 1 out of 100. It's not like it's got them all, for sure, and okay. I don't think that means it can't cause the disease, though, because, you know, it could do something subtle, and it might not have to be in every cell, it's just that there isn't any evidence for that. And, you know,
but what is the benefit of killing 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 healthy cells to kill one sick cell?
Well, if that one sick cell had some property about it that was going to get you...
But has that been shown to be the case?
Well, if it was, you know, let's say you had a... If you had a way when you try to kill cancer cells, you kill a lot of healthy cells too. It's not a very effective treatment, but the argument is you got nothing else to do. You're going to try to kill the cancer. Hopefully it's more susceptible to the chemical than the healthy cells. Now, in this case, they have the same argument, except for the fact that they say you're going to keep on using this drug knowing that it's killing your healthy cells until you die. You're not going to take it for 2 weeks and then hope that you've killed all the HIV and now you will be alive. It's not like that. They said, no, we're going to do the same thing that we do to cancer, but we're just going to keep on doing it until you die. And hopefully it's going to prolong your life. Well, if it doesn't prolong your life, what they look for is surrogate markers. Now, have you heard that term battered about? Surrogate markers means, well, it doesn't seem to do anything for the disease, but it does every now and then do something for the level of CD4 cell that we measure. Or does something for this or that. Not that anybody really knows whether you want more or less CD4 cells at any particular time in your life. A lot of diseases cause CD4 to go up. A lot of diseases cause it to go down. Nobody's even sure if a CD4 cell is always a CD4 cell. Just it's a marker on the cell at the time that they do this little counting procedure, which is to stick a fluorescent tag on there and say the ones that light up have CD4 on the outside. And we don't really know what those cells do. The immune system is incredibly complicated. And the immunologists' brains are not nearly complicated enough to deal with it. We have these little, you know, there are theories all over the place, but no real competent immunologist would tell you that CD4 levels was a surrogate marker for anything until we know more about it. But that's what they're using. That's what the FDA is saying. Yeah, you don't have to show that it helps them. These protease inhibitors, the same thing. Don't have to show that it helps the patient. You don't have to show a single life saved. All you have to do is show some little clinical indicator has changed in a way that somebody is hoping is going to make you better. The question really is whether it should be considered criminal behavior on the part of people who have the public trust. You know, I mean, it is criminal behavior to set off a bomb in a federal building. Is it criminal behavior to start passing out poisons to people who have no real diagnosable diseases, to babies, for instance?